Hello, Matt.
Hey, Bill.
How are you doing?
I am doing swell. How are you?
I'm okay. Folks may or may not have seen the announcement from the Bob Wright, Mickey Kouse dialogue from Wednesday, announcing big changes in blogheads.tv. And I don't want to, reiterate everything that Bob said, because Bob's gonna, because Bob knows it better than I do. But the key thing is that the weekend blog stays. There will still be the weekend blog in the next chapter of the life of Blogging Heads. And certainly Matt and I are going to still be around. I believe Kristen's still going to be around. So you're stuck with us is the upshot.
It'll be fun. This is too good of a thing. We can't let this phenomenon, this thing which is literally sweeping the nation, dozens of people.
It's very much like Arrested Development moving to Netflix.
Yes, and I think there's a movie, and maybe there's possibly a movie coming.
Right, I think the Netflix thing is sort of a build up to the movie.
Yeah,
but Fox tried to kill it, and the people wouldn't let it die. I think the same thing.
That's right.
With the weekend blog,
just like the Family Guy too. let me start. I want to start off by talking about. We don't do a lot on this, but Adam Carolla, who I'm a huge fan of, Adam Carolla, just for comedically.
I was a big Loveline fan
from
like 1995 to 1996.
But me too. I
haven't kept up with Adam too much since then.
Well, I wasn't a fan of The Man Show, but I loved Adam on Loveline, where you had Dr. Drew sort of as the straight man, and then Adam Carolla is not good scripted, and he's not good if he only has a short amount of time. He's really good at going on these rants. And just complaining about stuff and actually like making comparisons and analogies that are like very profound, but most people would never even think of. He's really super good at that. And he is out, it's funny. This is sort of reminds me of when Don Imus got fired for the nappy headed hose comment. Cause I felt like Imus says like racist and controversial stuff every day. Why are we glomming onto this?
Right,
and that's how I feel about this new meme. Adam Carolla is out with a video, which has gone viral. Now this is just him ranting and sort of mocking the Occupy Wall Street movement.
This is just part of his because he has a podcast. I know he's got a popular podcast. It's just part of that, not a separate thing he was doing.
Exactly. It's like the number one podcast in America is the Adam Carolla Show. I highly recommend it. It's one of the few that I listen to, religiously. And it's usually as a guest, but he basically talks 75% of the time for about an hour. And, he just goes on this jag about, Occupy Wall Street. And it's really nothing. 2 years ago at Politics Daily, I wrote a piece where he was basically, criticizing Obamacare and saying, look, I want drug companies greedy. I want them trying to make money because that's how we're going to cure cancer, that sort of thing.
So just so I, because I've not been following Carolla lately and his political inclination lately, he has generally been a conservative when he talks politics on his podcast.
Well, it's sort of weird. I mean, you can't really pigeonhole him. I mean, both Dr. Drew and Adam Carolla were both like opposed to Obamacare. And by the way, Dr. Drew and Dr. Bruce, the other fill-in from Loveline, they are regular guests on Adam's podcast now. So Dr. Drew comes on regularly as a guest, and they still have that old chemistry and that old magic. Carolla is hard to pigeonhole. I mean, he's an atheist. He, is pretty, pretty vulgar,
tends to. So like Ayn Rand, essentially.
Maybe a little bit libertarian, but he's, a rugged individualist, pull yourself up by your bootstraps, he played football in high school. I think he got a scholarship. He didn't go, but he got a scholarship. So he's a little bit that sort of old school. He really, I think he appeals a lot to young conservatives who maybe aren't like dogmatically social conservatives, but want to have fun and, kind of get off on having someone who's like, best friends with Jimmy Kimmel, a legitimate celebrity, who like, says conservative stuff. And this video has gone viral. I've seen it all over the place. Dave Weigel has it on his blog, but it's been on a lot of conservative blogs.
So what's he saying? What is so special about this particular?
See, that's the thing. I don't know that it's really all that special, because like I listen to him all the time, and there's nothing that he said here that he doesn't say all the time. I'll just read you an excerpt. Self-entitled pricks who think the world owes them a living. Now we're getting the first wave of these douchebags. You get out in the real world, you realize, I'm an effing loser. He doesn't say effing. So in other words, he's basically saying that the Occupy Wall Street people are you know, rich, privileged kids who've been, you know, catered to their whole lives. And that's essentially what this is. And again, it's nothing. Here's what I'm guessing happened. I'd love to trace it back and find out, like, who was the first guy who picked up on this. Because somebody stumbled across this and said, wow, some, you know, Hollywood guy is saying conservative stuff. And somehow it got people who probably weren't as familiar with Corolla as I am. But like I say, 2 years ago, I wrote a piece at Politics Daily about how Adam Corolla was, you know, opposing Obamacare. So this is nothing new for him.
Right.
He's always,
there does seem to be this dynamic where conservatives have long tried to pillory Hollywood as this disgusting cesspool of liberalism, yet any conservative in Hollywood gets completely feted by almost the entire conservative movement whenever they speak up.
Oh, totally. Nobody is more enamored of celebrities than conservatives. And but I will say this, Corolla is different. He will not become co-opted by conservatives. I mean, he is, you know, he has done stuff with like Reason magazine before, like Drew Carey, but he's not gonna be like co-opted by anybody. He basically says that he hates the religious right and he hates the left. I mean, he is who he is, and this is
Bill Maher used to be.
Yeah, it's exactly. And by the way, he goes on Bill Maher, and he also criticizes Bill Maher on his podcast all the time. He tells people exactly what he thinks and lets the chips fall where they met.
You don't necessarily see this as a shifting of Corolla trying to become more politically relevant.
No, not at all. This isn't like Dennis Miller, you know, he's not going to have a conservative radio show, although he's had Dennis Miller on his show. I think he's guest hosted Dennis Miller's radio show. But Corolla is not going to run for office. He's not going to try to be like a Fox News pundit. This is just him being him.
There's no Gary Johnson, Adam Corolla, Libertarian Party ticket in the offing?
I don't think so. I think someone just stumbled across him being him and they were like surprised by it. But again, this is really, he was saying the same stuff on Loveline, by the way. You probably, you know, I mean.
I don't remember them getting very political on Loveline.
I think he's only political because he talks every day for hours and he has a news segment where the lady who reads the news, reads the news and then he comments on it. So it's not, in other words, he might have talked for 99 minutes about, or he might have talked for like 50 minutes about Taboo 2 and, you know, one of his favorite porns. And then he might have spent 10 minutes on Occupy Wall Street. So, I mean, it's not as if it's becoming political, but I bring it up just because it's interesting how this thing has gone viral and I've seen it all over the place. And but you're right.
I think people on both sides like a good rant.
Yes.
And they can be, motivated. I mean, the whole Tea Party arguably, you know, was sparked by the Santelli rant.
Right. And that's Dave Weigel's headline, by the way. Adam Corolla is the new Rick Santelli.
So I guess we'll see if, again, I mean, you're suggesting that maybe not quite, if Corolla's not going to keep this up and make it sort of a regular staple of his podcast.
I mean, I think it already is.
Or maybe not people are hip to it, that they'll start sharing his political snippets more.
Yeah. I mean, this could happen where more conservatives are, like, listening. I mean, I know, like, for example, I'm obviously a big fan of his show, Mary Catherine Hamm here at the Daily Caller. has long been a big fan of the show. I think a lot of libertarians like him, but again, it's, he's not like a dogmatic or like mm-hmm. normal conservative. I mean, again, he's an atheist. Mm-hmm. He is, he's probably like for legalizing prostitution. He's probably for like legalizing drugs, but he's like Bill Maher used to be, or at least used to pretend to be.
Right. Well, you know, I take it that conservatives are generally casting about for how do we replenish the movement ranks with young blood. I said that's sort of been a long-standing project. You go to CPAC, you always see a lot of students there. But obviously the youth vote did not break the conservative way in 2008. And some have talked about, you know, is the Obama presidency going to lock in a generation of liberals, essentially? Is there sort of an appetite for conservatives trying to find someone who is going to resonate with younger voters in a way that, say, the current crop of presidential candidates is not necessarily doing?
Man, I don't know if this is like any sort of orchestrated effort, but like I said, and like you said, I mean, nobody is more enamored of celebrity than conservatives. I mean, like, Hannity, his Great American Panel, which I've been on, but, you know, really can't watch anymore. I mean, it's like, you know, it's basically like someone who's like a NASCAR driver and someone who like wasn't in movies 20 years ago. I mean, they're like, they love celebrities. And like, you know, if you were in Hootie and the Blowfish, you're better than, you know, George Will. There's this weird sort of thing where conservatives deride Hollywood, but love, if any star, Patricia Heaton or whomever, you know, the guy from Frasier, I mean, Tom Selleck. I mean, you kind of have to reach to find them, but like, they really hold them up on high because they're so precious and so rare.
You're holding on to Victoria Jackson, I really do not understand at all.
Right. She wasn't even that great on Saturday Night Live. Come on. But no, I think the thing with Corolla that people like is this sort of an irreverent thing, because look, here's the thing about liberals. It does get a little preachy. It does get a little paternalistic. And that's not cool. And I think that the Corolla, that's what turns him off to liberalism, is this sort of preachy, holier-than-thou bullshit.
You're saucy today, Matt.
I'm salty. And by the way, let's point out that the earlier stuff was a direct quote, which won't prevent... when I run for president in 2034 or whenever, from this being, you know, called. But let me, I think that that's Corolla's appeal. It's like this, we're sick of the political correct mess. And he, I think he sort of is pushing.
Well, I mean, conservatives have sort of, I mean, the left got really pilloried on political correctness in the 90s, but I would argue in the John Stewart era of liberalism, that we haven't been tagged as the humorless, preachy, sticks in the mud. That we've been the looser bunch, and the conservatives have been the ones who have gotten very uppity with very minor language transgressions.
I would say that Corolla is against any of the complaining, any of the bitching, any of the uppityness. And by the way, you just proved that you can use the word uppity without being racist. So let it just be said that it's not always a code word, but I think that Corolla would be against any sort of victim mentality, any sort of card one could play, any victim card, any of that stuff. He would be like bipartisanly against any of that stuff. And he's been on my podcast, by the way. I should throw that out. He was on the Matt Lewis Show podcast promoting his book, In 50 Years We'll All Be Chicks, which, of course, is, you know, very apropos of our discussion of his of not bowing to political correctness.
Speaking of a lack of political correctness, it looks like you guys might nominate Newt Gingrich as your nominee. How is the conservative blogosphere feeling about that?
I think it's mixed. I think it's mixed. There are certainly a lot of skeptics, like Michelle Malkin, of course, doesn't like him. A lot of people it was this line from The Godfather 2 where they say, your father liked Hyman Roth, your father respected him, but he never trusted him. And I think that's how a lot of conservatives thought about Newt Gingrich. They like him, they respect him, but they don't fully trust him. I think the thing that, Newt has some stuff, there are some liberals who cannot fathom the possibility that Newt will be nominated, and I believe it is entirely possible. I'm not predicting.
I have begun to fathom it, for the record. I did not fathom it 2 weeks ago. I fathom it now.
There are a couple things. There are a few things he has going for him, right? Some conservatives perhaps naively believe that debating is what will win, and that Newt will crush Obama in a debate, and so he's got that going for him. I think that people, conservatives, liberals, everybody, you want to, there's a revolutionary thing where you want to be a part of something and a movement. Well, Mitt Romney doesn't inspire anybody, but Newt Gingrich can. It's a bit romantic. It's something, maybe it's deluded, but you can believe in it. So I think he's got that going for him. And then lastly, I think that there is a bit of this sort of inferiority complex that some conservatives have. They feel that they've been portrayed as stupid. I think that hurt Rick Perry. I mean, the guy's probably a bright guy, but the whole Southern swagger slow thing, and then the oops and the gaps that he had, like, reinforced it. I think conservatives are very sensitive about being perceived as being stupid, despite some of the anti-intellectual rhetoric. Mm-hmm. And so I think Newt is also a way to say, hey, look, we're smart too. I mean, Newt knows a lot of stuff. For a variety of reasons, I think he's for real.
Right, and I agree with all of that as reasons why there seems to be some coalescing nationally in the polling around him as the conservative alternative for Romney. But the fact that he is the flavor of the month wouldn't be enough for me to say he can really win, because what I'd long been saying, I believe I said here and I said on my own Liberal Oasis podcast, was if you don't have any kind of ground game. If you're not really doing campaign appearances in the early primary states and caucus states, I'm not going to take you seriously as a candidate. And the only reason why I'm revising that now is that it's dawning on me that no one has a ground game in Iowa right now, at least as far as we can tell. Because Romney was seriously for the longest time, and Pawlenty had the biggest ground game, and he packed it in. And the only things that I sort of don't know is to what extent is, say, Romney or maybe even Perry – is organizing quietly,
right?
And there's an adage in Iowa that the way to win is to organize, and get hot at the end. At this stage of the game in 2003, December 2003, Howard Dean was in first place with 29%, and John Kerry was in third place with 18%. So Howard Dean was at 29% at this point of the race in Iowa in 2003. John Kerry was in third place at 18%, wasn't being taken all that seriously. People were starting to get on the Dean bandwagon, and Al Gore endorsed him and whatnot. And a pretty short period of time, there was a very rapid turnaround. And so, and Kerry apparently was very quietly building a very solid organization in Iowa. So when the moment struck, he was there to take advantage of the opportunity. So either a Romney or a Perry who presumably have some kind of ground game in Iowa,
right,
might take advantage if Newt, suffers the same fate as Bachman and Kane and Newt Gingrich of 12 months ago. Or no one's got a real ground game, and being the media favorite of the moment will be enough to get you through. And whether or not Newt beats Romney in New Hampshire, they'd still be 1-1, and then all the turf after that's not terribly favorable to Romney. So I wouldn't say I put money on Newt doing it, but the path is more available now, and I don't think we've talked about the past of have the rules changed. I don't think that the rules has changed. It's that almost no one's playing, so and someone's gonna be the last guy left standing.
All right, so let me say that. I think it's entirely possible that Mitt and Perry are doing things in a somewhat clandestine way, especially Romney. I wouldn't discount the fact that, Gingrich can have a ground game. I think he has pivoted a little bit from being just a debate candidate to being a real candidate. He's got the largest staff in operation in South Carolina. A lot of good stuff happening in South Carolina. They just opened an office in Iowa yesterday, I understand. Furniture was delivered yesterday. Staff are starting. So, I mean, it may not be like the best operation, but I don't think he's going to concede any sort of operation. And by the way, let me highly recommend I link to this in my Daily Caller blog, but Roger Simon in 2004 wrote the definitive piece on the Iowa ground game. And he talks about Kerry's organizer, Hooley, I think is how it's pronounced, who kicked butt. And by the way, he didn't start in Iowa until after Thanksgiving. So as late in the game as it seems to be, there's still, you can do canvassing and IDing via phone calls and then have real people go talk to the persuadables and the undecided. So relatively small pool of people presumably are likely caucus goers. And so I wouldn't say that it's out of the question that Gingrich could actually run a legitimate ground game there.
But to go back to your earlier points about how conservatives seem to be treating Gingrich as the champion debater that we need to go toe-to-toe with Obama, which seems to me to be a tacit acknowledgement that perhaps he's not reliant on a teleprompter, is actually the president's actually a bright guy. But is there any kind of concern that you're seeing that the conservative echo chamber of conservative blogs and talk radio and Fox News are creating a false sense of what the criteria is for a successful presidential candidate? Everyone seems sort of settled on this. You got to have a good debater to be, you know, a presidential candidate. Mm-hmm. When, you know, there are examples where people who are not great debaters, you know, maybe not disasters, but who are not great debaters still became president because of other circumstances. Might folks be settling on a weak choice because the media infrastructure, including blogs, has distorted people's sense of reality?
I think it's plausible. I think that it's also possible that it is if they say it is. If they say debating is the most important thing, then maybe it, by virtue of that, it is. And it wouldn't surprise me as we become more and more of a superficial and television media-generated society if the ability to appear on TV and to debate well may overtake other factors. The obvious point would be, if you're a great debater but you can't raise money, that would be a problem. But I'm not convinced the two couldn't go hand in hand.
But there's also a corollary to this, which is, you know, one, is being a great debater that critical, and two, is Newt Gingrich actually a good debater? Are you your basis on appearances amongst other Republicans? Whereas he's basically had one tack, which is browbeating the moderator. And that may not be a tactic that's as successful in a general election debate setting.
I mean, it's entirely possible that that what works, that the things that you would say or that the calculus to win a debate in a Republican primary may not be the same as to win a general election debate. I think it's clear that Newt Gingrich is articulate and knowledgeable, and there are certainly other candidates in the Republican primary that have shown signs that they would not be as articulate or knowledgeable in a general election debate. The other problem, too, is, I mean, how many debates is Obama going to have with Newt and when? I mean, I presume that they will not do the 7 Lincoln-Douglas debates that Newt wants.
Well, and this is an interesting question, particularly if he gets it. I mean, for a very, very, very long time, we haven't had, it's always been a little bit of a jockeying between the two campaigns about how many debates they're going to have, but it's never been seriously in doubt. And we've had a very similar structure going back now to 1992. 3 debates, 2 with 1 moderator, 1 town hall style with a moderator presiding. all run by the Commission on Presidential Debates, which is run by two former party chairs, and there are third-party folks that are very critical of the commission because they feel that they don't make it easy for 30-party folks to get in. But be that as it may, that's sort of been kind of the accepted setup. And if Gingrich comes in demanding something far more unique, you know, he seems to be suggesting it's going to be very daring and Obama's going to look weak if he doesn't take him up on the offer.
Well, and let's not forget, John McCain proposed, famously, a series of, I think, 10 town hall debates with Obama.
Right, right. And Obama shrugged off and saying, this is ridiculous.
Right,
and Obama paid no price for shrugging it off.
No price at all. And John McCain said, look, this is what Barry Goldwater and John Kennedy agreed to do in 1964. They were going to tour the country together, come in together, you know, travel together, and do these town hall, or I don't know the town hall debates, but that's what McCain wanted, because that's what McCain was good at. But you're right, Obama paid no price for it. Now, I don't know if you heard, Gingrich was on Hannity Wednesday night, and said if Obama doesn't agree to the debates, that Gingrich will follow him everywhere he goes, and will 4 hours later rebut everything he says, like a stalker.
I believe Gingrich just said that himself. And,
you
know, if that's where it ended up, I'm not sure the Obama campaign would mind.
I don't know that that would be it sounds like an interesting threat, but I'm not sure that it would work. It could definitely make him look like, I mean, you're always responding, you're like a stalker, you're looks desperate, you're not proactive. I don't think he would do it.
Right. But it seems like conservatives we're overgeneralizing, I'm sure there's lots of differences of opinion amongst conservatives, but at least enough conservatives are very intrigued and enthralled by just Newt's debate performances and Newt's proposed debate strategy that's going to be sort of a novel way to trip Obama up. And it just sort of feels to me like where a lot of us were in 2003, where we're saying, wait a second, there's no way Karl Rove is going to trip up John Kerry. He's a veteran. You can't call a veteran unpatriotic. That will never happen.
Right.
And you delude yourself of what might actually happen in a general election setting.
Yeah, I mean, I think that if we've learned anything this cycle, it's that none of us can predict what's going to happen because it's unpredictable. But I think that I would just go back to I think that there is a thing that Newt has, which is this excitement, this revolutionary, for lack of a better word, appeal of people believing in something and getting excited about something that is really missing from the Republican primary. I mean,
I just find that so odd.
Nobody is inspiring other than Newt.
I mean, the general notion of getting excited about someone I get, but you would think, with conservatives so livid at Obama, to take a chance. Democrats went through this in 2004, and so I don't want to pretend that I wasn't in a similar place back then. I was very excited about Howard Dean. I thought Dean was going to be sort of uniquely inspiring and straight talking, and someone that showed some conviction, which is what Democrats need to have, someone who had some conviction politics, and they're going to be able to build trust with the American people. And the fact that Dean had some unorthodox positions was a bonus that would help.
And maybe
him
he would have been better off if Dean got the nomination. I mean, John Kerry lost anyway.
Right.
Dean,
maybe, but
people
that's
would
all
have gotten excited. And the other thing too is, you know, there have been two times in modern history when Republicans didn't play it safe. I mean, they're usually very pragmatic. I mean, the saying, Democrats fall in love, Republicans fall in line, didn't just appear out of nowhere. It's there for a reason, because Republicans almost always fall in line. And the two times that they didn't was 1964 and 1980. And I would even argue in 1964 that in Goldwater's landslide loss to LBJ, it planted the seeds that later gave us Reagan. So, I mean, Howard Dean could have run and inspired a generation of young progressives. You could argue 4 years later, Obama gets elected. If you like Obama, then maybe it all worked out. That was an argument for Dean back then, too,
that even if he did lose, you know, there's ways to lose well and lose badly, at least if you're losing based on your convictions, you have something to build off of.
Yeah, it's not an absurd theory.
And so maybe that is an argument for Gingrich. I don't feel like that's the argument being made for Gingrich right now.
Well, the problem is it's really an argument against Romney, and the argument against Romney is that he basically is he would be George W. Bush again, where conservatives would once again be fooled by an establishment guy who would not cut spending, would not do anything, for lack of a better word, radical, that would rein in entitlements. He's a good manager. He would just basically spend a little bit less than the Democrats. Look, I think the compelling argument, whether you're a Democrat or a Republican, for partisanship is the Supreme Court. I mean, that's the argument for electability, is that those appointments are for life, and if you're a Republican, you'd rather have Mitt Romney appointing the next Alito and Roberts than Barack Obama appointing the next Kagan. But otherwise, I think you make a good argument that sometimes losing is winning and sometimes winning is losing.
I agree with all that, but all that aside, it just seems like Gingrich seems much more likely to be the Goldwater than the Reagan here, because he has so much baggage that has been very well documented and often repeated by the candidate himself. So if you're going to go, Dean at least had sort of the advantage of being a fresh face, so you didn't quite know where his weak spots might be. And then when he collapsed.
You're right. I mean, you're right. But keep in mind, I mean, in 1980, Ronald Reagan had changed positions on abortion, proposed some taxes in California. He was divorced. You could have potentially made some of the same arguments about Reagan and said, I mean, a lot of people thought it was outlandish, and obviously Carter wanted Reagan.
Yep.
So, I mean, I'm not saying Gingrich is Reagan. I think he's probably more like Churchill. but you get my point.
So it strikes me as a hell of a gamble, if that's the way you guys go.
Cocaine's a hell of a drug. let's talk about the guy that you might like better, or might maybe fares better in a general election. Mm-hmm. That I think is picking up a little steam is John Huntsman.
Now this is very fascinating. I was on in my podcasting for a long time to take Huntsman seriously, that he could have a much better chance of consolidating the remaining moderates in the Republican electorate, that if he drove home a pro-science, pro-fact argument, that he could distinguish himself amongst everybody else. He made some steps towards doing that, but never really stuck with it, and hasn't had strong debate performances, and it's been really mired in, you know, low single digits. But it seems like he has gotten some New Hampshire traction, and now, even though he's pulling terrible nationally, he might even get in the Iowa debates because he doesn't meet the qualifications. But Eric Erickson, sort of this self-appointed arbiter of conservative tastes in the blogosphere, is saying nice things about Huntsman now.
Yeah, let me read it. John Huntsman's rising in New Hampshire. If Huntsman comes back in New Hampshire, he is in the game. He goes on to say his record as governor is more conservative than Newt Gingrich and Mitt Romney combined. He is more pro-life than either of them. He is more economically wedded to the free market than either of them. He has better foreign policy experience than either of them. Huntsman should be a conservative hero in the race, but Erickson goes on to blame his campaign, which I think is probably true.
But obviously he's surrounded by a lot of former McCain guys, I believe. But that was a choice of his. I mean, he has sort of actively tried this.
If you go back and hear what he actually said, it wasn't a choice. They built the campaign before he signed off on it.
But he chose the sign.
It's kind of, in any event. So Erickson, as you mentioned, is, and I'm starting to feel like Huntsman is, he's, you know, Morning Joe Scarborough has been pushing him hard. Today he was retweeting Eric Erickson's quotes. But And I'm starting to see some signs as well. I'll give you just one example. Yesterday I wrote a piece where I quoted Ross Douthat's New York Times piece about Huntsman's campaign, essentially criticizing him for positioning himself as a moderate. And Huntsman's people pushed back. They contacted me, they pushed back, and I wrote a follow-up piece today quoting them, explaining their side, and they do have some interesting points to make. But my biggest observation there is that this is a campaign who does not want to let the meme that he's a moderate stand, and that they are aggressively now making their case that he is a conservative for the first time. It's like this. Imagine this. It's almost like a novel idea that if you want to win a Republican primary, you run as a conservative. Maybe it's too late, but they're waking up to this.
What seems to be different now is the people remaining at the top of the heap, Romney and Gingrich, are not considered pure conservatives by many conservatives. Now, it's sort of weird for liberals to think of Gingrich as being seen as more as a relative moderate, but I know there are conservatives that feel that way. So now Huntsman has sort of a fresh opportunity to say, well, you can't get mad at me about my global warming positions when Romney and Gingrich have said similar things. You can't get mad at me about individual mandate because they've been way more for individual mandate than I ever have. So he now gets to say, look, you know, these are the choices you're left with, and you know, I might be a little bit more of a spoonful of sugar for the general electorate to swallow than Gingrich, who is sort of the consummate condescending blowhard, and Mitt Romney, who no one seems to take as a sincere politician who says what he believes.
Yeah, and again, you know, we've got a month, but a month ago, you know, Herman Cain was doing better. It would have been going to him. And a month ago, Newt Gingrich wasn't the front runner. So, I mean, anything could happen. Huntsman is, I feel like he's starting to turn things around. I don't know if it's too late.
And going back to a separate organization, presumably he has a New Hampshire organization. He might have organization anywhere else. And he may have it in New Hampshire.
And he's got all sorts of family money. I mean, his dad's running, you know, funding the Super PAC in New Hampshire.
Right, but I mean, you can only write a check so fast and turn that into an apparatus.
Right.
But if Gingrich really punctures the sense of Romney as the inevitable candidate, that drags down Romney's numbers in New Hampshire, Huntsman presumably is poised to pick up those pieces because he has an apparatus there that he can take advantage of, and a lot of FaceTime with New Hampshire media and contact with the New Hampshire voters.
Yeah, and I mean, that's probably what happened in 08. I mean, if Romney wins Iowa, he probably, I'm guessing, he very well could have parlayed that into a win in New Hampshire. But Huckabee deprived him of the win in Iowa, and McCain went on to win in New Hampshire. So there's a lot of moving parts, and it is interesting to watch. But I wouldn't write off Huntsman. I tweeted this out yesterday. I mean,
who do you write off now? Can we write some people off?
All right. I'm writing off Herman Cain. I'm going to write off Michelle Bachmann. I'm hesitant to write her off just because she won the Ames straw poll. But I'm going to write off Cain. I'm going to write off Bachmann. I don't think you can quite write off Rick Perry with his $17 million or whatever. I am going to write off.
Can we write off Santorum?
I'm going to write off Santorum. I'm going to write off Gary Johnson.
Can we write off Ron Paul?
I think Ron Paul could surprise people and do better than expected, but he will not be the Republican nominee for president. That's for sure.
Is it possible, if no one in Iowa has a ground game, that the Paulites pull off an Iowa upset?
I think it's within the realm of possibility. I don't think it would matter. Like, I think that would be
right.
It for them.
It
but
would
yeah.
Be it, right.
I mean, they do really well. There's a small group of very intense activists and supporters for Ron Paul, and it's within the realm of possibility that they could.
All interesting, Matt, and it's only a month away.
Yes.
Does it feel like a month away to you? Just the timeline of this just seems very weird to me, that it seems like it's not really gelled.
No, it's
but perhaps it's always been that way. Perhaps somebody, everyone's perceptions get miscolored because, you know, people, it seemed like in 2003 that it had gelled.
Yeah.
And we were just wrong that it gelled.
I mean, like, this is like everything else. Like, on one hand, I feel like I can't believe we've only got a month left. And on the other hand, I feel like we've been doing this for 5 years, you know?
Right.
So, it's sort of, it's weird. But man, the people who are on the campaigns are the ones who really feel it. And, you know, they're not going to have Christmases and New Year's and holidays. So we got it.
I mean, I know there's been a lot. Everyone's sort of tired of the debates, and we've had lots of 15 minutes for various candidates. But it doesn't feel like there's been a real substantive debate that people have had.
You know what? The most substantive debate was actually that Iowa faith and family or whatever it was. I don't know if you saw that forum. That was really good.
Mm-hmm.
Frank Luntz
moderated. I've not seen them all, so perhaps if I was a Republican primary voter and I'd seen them all, I'd feel like, okay, I really got a good
It wasn't vacuum. Even televised. It was just on the web, but it was the best, the most substantive, I thought.
Well, all right. So, I mean, do you feel like everyone's got a good crack at these guys, that people can make an informed choice now?
I think we know all we need to know.
you don't have to tell me, but if you were in Iowa, do you know who you would vote for?
I think today, I think I do.
You don't gotta say. I don't have to, I'm not trying to put you on the spot.
But you know, I try to not root for anybody, but you end up I think you probably end up having a set of candidates you like and a set of candidates you don't like. And it surprisingly has little to do with ideology and more to do with who talks to you and who's quotable and who's interesting. I mean, that's probably like where the bias, the untold story of bias is the bias toward interesting people who talk to you and provide access. That's probably, and I'm guessing that's like something that a lot of grassroots activists would be outraged by. But there's a reason why John McCain did so well, like, among the press, and especially in 2000, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And look, if Romney and Obama win the nominations, and we know Obama will, it could be horrible for, never mind me, reporters. I mean, these are two guys who don't say a lot of interesting things and who keep the press at a distance. Romney Obama would be very difficult to cover and very boring to cover as a reporter. And you would not have a lot of access. It's not the Straight Talk Express.
Interesting point.
Yeah.
Should we leave it on that note, sir?
Let's leave it there.
All right. Always good to talk to you, of course, and we'll still be talking in the next chapter of bloggingheads.tv.
That's right.
And until then, until next week, this has been The Week in Blog. Take care.